got two meetings we had in accordance to that thing. We will require that the minister be present today. And hopefully tomorrow we don't. And the 15-week official department and home. Of course, we want to give some of the issues that we think from the point of view of the community. Quite important to start. So the issues we have identified, I think we have been dealing with, they are not new. But in the course of the meeting, our discussions and preparation for our adoption of our budget, started with new recommendation form. We identified what we thought were the key issues in the whole of the that require attention. So honorable members, we appreciate that this is quite big issues in the energy sector and they can take that to deal with each one. We hope that we will be able to cover sufficient each one of them in hand. From the side of the chair, on behalf of the committee, because these are not new. Our general attitude has been that, of course, these matters have been before the committee before. We want a meeting where we can comprehensively deal with these matters. In some instances, we just want to be sure. That's why we want the minister present. We want to be sure what's happening with regard to certain processes that we are told behind on these matters so that there is certainty on the part of the committee but also the part of the public with regard to what is happening in all of these matters that are so important. For instance, we want to make sure that by the time we finish this meeting, there is absolute clarity with regard to what is going to happen with outstanding policy papers. The committee has always said very key to the work of the people. And in this regard, the IP and the IP. So clarity with regard to where the department is and where they're going and what are the chances with regard to the final application of this process. There have been discussions with regard to the new nuclear nuclear program. Could have an in-depth discussion. But more importantly for the committee and the public is where are we with regard to that program? Because the program has been on and sometimes off. And when we think it's off, and then it's on. So we want to be clear. Where are we exactly? And I'm saying that the rest of the detail will continue to discuss, but there's got to be clarity with regard to the general attitude of government with regard to this matter. Is it on the table? And what's the process of doing? So we once met here to discuss the fees, and the various ministers told us we finalized them. So sometimes they have been finalized and then the other day they are not being finalized. So we want to know from the minister now. So where are we with regard to these and rôle aussi vital qui nous protège de subject. So that the public too is clear with regard to what are the intentions of government. So hopefully by the time we finish today or tomorrow, those things will be clear. Members know in the past there were reports on the restructuring of an important holding company, sometimes some code names of the restructuring projects that were engaged in. So, what has happened is, so we're told there's a restructuring process underway, and there's a report, and then later on, off the table. So, we just need to be clear. Is there a restructuring process underway? How long is it going to take? When are we going to get a report? Or is there a report of the restructuring? And then, if the report is available, when will it come for the moment? So, on all those big issues in the NSF, we want some level of certainty today with regard to where out. So we have made sure that they will ask the minister that all the important ladies and gentlemen should also be present here so that certain matters can be clarified today. Every time I see the issue of the Department of Energy, the other day we were having a big discussion about this. I tell you, asking, so where is the country stop? So, and then, so we get different answers. We're having an investigation, we're going to court, or we're doing both. So, what exactly are we doing? What are we doing? So, we never get. So, hopefully, by the time we finish this interview, we will know what's happening with the sky. So we need clarity on all of these important matters. So that's why we convene in this manner. And just to warn you, honorable members, that please, you don't have to be present in the committee until 5 o'clock on your church. I do know that there's a house sitting now. When we were given permission to meet, the house chair was aware that there's going to be a city. They have given us permission to be there. And this afternoon, if there's voting at any point in the house, we will adjourn to go and vote and come back. But we've been given permission to be here until 5 o'clock. So we expect that all members in the committee continue to finish. So with that, we can get apologies. After the court has given us this apology, Honorable Makar, we can hear your apologies. Because I can see you want to submit to the test.
Thank you, sir. Apologies. I just want to find out what's going to be going on. Chair, just to notify you that I'll be setting the debate this afternoon on economic development, so I will need to pop out briefly just to deliver a speech and a half, and then I will return. Thank you.
Energy Act, Act 34 of 2008. Very important because we are issues because where do we get money? Among the other things that these energy policies it says that we need to ensure diversity in terms of energy resources that are available. Why do you want to use the word diversity? It's coming very closely to our energy policy, which is mixed energy policy. For all natural resources, we use mixed policy. Whether it's water, whether it's energy, is nothing unique. And the energy source is always about what you have as an endowment. It's not about something you just wake up. You work on the basis of what you have. That's the first thing. Secondly, is issues of sustainability. Sustainability, you don't want interruptions. You want certainty that there's going to be the security of supply all the time and when you need it. Unlike the incident that happened around 2008, 2009, 2010, where we could not guarantee the sustainability and the availability of the resource. We also talk about issues of affordability. Because energy is the biggest energy, it must be at a cost that you can afford, either for social economic activities or other activities that are there. Because if the prices of energy that are at the highest, they are going to become an impediment, either for growth, for stability and others. Therefore, it is in our interest that prices are actually kept to be affordable. But in the main, it's also about support to South Africa's economic prosperity, which is economic growth, which are the major issues we are looking at in terms of our vision, which is 2030, the NDP, poverty elimination. But when you look at image, you will not be in a position not to consider issues of environment. It has an impact on the environment. And remember, the environment must never be harmful. It must be sanitized, must be in a manner that even future generations, they don't have problems. Then environmental is also the fact. That's how broadly we look at our work on the basis of law. The department in the main, we develop legislation, policies, undertake programs, including other people who are implementing work on behalf of government, which are the state-owned companies or entities, with clarity to say what are their issues. Lastly, on this matter, want to reconfirm, South Africa's energy policy has not changed and it will never change. It's energy mix. It's energy mix because it's on the basis of what is your endowment. Your endowment as a country has two components. One component, you have land use. This country, we are blessed with uranium that you can extract through mining, get those rich isotopes, put them into the system, produce nuclear power. Not only nuclear power, but also produce other things. We'll talk about it later on. Secondly, we have gas. The gas is not in abundance here. In the main, we still have to be able to do more exploration, do more research, and see how much endowment we have, whether in our methane beds, in terms of our oceans and seas. But in the meantime, it's part of what we have in the system, depending on what we're also getting from the region. But the other biggest endowment you have, the South African people, is the availability of fossils, which is carbon that is there, which is still cold. It has been there for many years. That's what you have. On the other side, you have nice blue skies. You have the sun here, but not all parts of our country have sufficient radiation. When you look at thermodynamics and thermophysics, you also have winds in certain parts of our country. We have hydro, which is water. we have, we must always know that at a particular point, they will be depleted, they will not be there all the time. Therefore, for future generations, on how we use them, we must use them in a manner that is responsible, so that we don't entirely be thrown forward. I thought we should be able to clarify that, because government must take certainty to say, why do you make choices? One of the things, because of the development in the world, we have said that this policy, when it is implemented, and all the other considerations we have, we need to look at clean energy. That is, this by 2025, we must have at least 80% in our system, which is clean energy. Why do you actually choose 2025? It's because certain things, they come into the pact. You have an obligation. One of the obligations is on environmental consideration, climate change. It's a reality. By 2025, there's an obligation in terms of the Paris Declaration that was a signal to say emissions will be reduced. Therefore, clean energy is not an option, because you want this environment to be pristine so that you don't pass the challenges to other people. That's where we want to create certainty. No movement, no change. Our work is informed by the laws that this parliament has passed. I'm not going to go to them. In the main, there's an enabling legislation. One of which I've referred to is the National Energy Act, which is an overarching one. Then there's an issue around electricity regulation, because we must be able to regulate it. A petroleum product and the others, I'm not going to go to those ones. But what we can just caution, Chair, the list we've given is not exhaustive. There are other legislations, but in the main, these are the strategic drivers. As we have said, there are other legislation which have to do with issues of environment. We don't work alone on this space. That's why your environmental legislation and other plans like the Environmental Act, the Water Act and others, they will come into the picture, because our work impacts on that one. The other issue, there are other people who do work on our behalf. We call them our subsidiaries that are looking at sectorial work. One of which is around gas industry. Because gas is an important energy input to the system. Well, later on we'll speak about it. We have liquid fuels, we have nuclear industry and electricity industry. And you could see the areas that they are involved. There have been certain developments in the energy space over time. But we want to look at a period between 2017 to 2018. Why do you look until 2018? 2017 is where we are. By 2018, we are trying to align your planning, your decisions into the country's plan, which is the NDP. Remember, the NDP is until 2018. That's how we look at our work. There are certain steps, not all the steps, that we just, when later on we speak about IRP, integrated energy plan, we speak to. There are things that are going to happen between now. That may not happen. It's not exhausting. There is something that is going to happen in South Africa between 2024 and 2028. The current energy balance system, which is in the main, the highest percentage is driven by coal power stations. Something is going to happen. A number of our power stations are going to be decommissioned. They are going to be decommissioned, one, because of the age factor, the availability of the source itself. They are also going to be decommissioned because there are other implications. One of the implications is environmental. By 2025, we should have started to meet our targets. In other words, that obligation in terms of Paris Declaration is kicked in. there are going to be huge implications, not about the capacity of the energy available in the system, but a number of jobs are going to be lost, especially in a province like Mpumalanga and others where you have the footprint of coal-fired power stations. This is what is going to happen. The country must be ready that this additional, this capacity that is going to come out of the system, and in terms of our experience, in terms of built environment, we must be in a position to actually cater for that with the government. That's one. In other words, we are not going to start to build, whether it's a renewable component or non-renewable component, and start to build around 2025. The experience in the built environment for renewables on average is 2 years to about 3 to 4 years. That's what it happens. Non-renewable, it moves from different phases, especially our experience around coal power station, our experience to finish mega projects on time within budget. It can take you between 5 years to 12 to 13 years. And you could see we're beginning to be on a cash cut. And this is a matter we can't argue. It's a matter that these are the dynamics on how you feel. You don't feel where it is required to be. That's one important thing that we consider in the balance sheet. Secondly, in the balance sheet, why is going to be certain plants that are getting off the grid? Additional capacity is going to come to the grid. This additional capacity is on the basis of the work that is currently underway. That has taken long for various reasons. One of them is to see the unified premises. It's going to come on stream. And it's the right thing to do when you look at the balance sheet, because energy is a balance sheet. Number three, around 2025, the issues of environment, and climate change, they can't be ignored. We have chosen this path as people of South Africa and Africa to say we want to live in an environment that is not harmful. Therefore, many of our systems, by 2025, they must be responsive, they must be compliant. We are not going to start to be compliant in 2025. You need to start to build it in now. Adjust your plan, adjust your infrastructure, introduce new technologies and investments. That's what it means. Others are going to be able to comply on time. Others are not going to be able to comply on time, but the deadline of 2025 to have reduced in terms of what we deposited in the UN as our commitment. Everything we're going to do everything we're going to do, whether it's the renewables, non-renewable sources into the system, from a planning point of view, the question of pace is about time. When does it come to the system? When do you come alive? It's applicable for all of them in the built environment. The scale is also applicable across all of them, because the scale is a function of demand. Who wants to do an uptake, for what purposes, what is going to be consumption, that's what it means. You can't build for something that is not going to be taken up. But then there are variables to speak to. Then there's affordability. Affordability in the main is to say the cost must be affordable so that it does not become a constraint. Affordability, we're speaking at the end user, because you don't want the end user to bear the burden of prices that are actually not acceptable. But you look at the whole big chain. You can't just wake up and say, when you look at affordability, you just do the operations and maintenance. You look at from planning, where do you get the source? Is it mined, you extract it? In the question of oil and gas, we are going to import it, it's not here in South Africa. Then you build the infrastructure inside, someone must build it. But when someone is building it, you lose money. In other words, you invest. But material must come in, localization must happen, beneficiation must happen, people must be employed. Someone does that. Then you operate the system and you maintain the system. Then government must come in and say, when you operate this system, regulate the prices. Remember, the prices are twofold. There's an issue of the tariff, but then there's an issue of return on investment. That's what it means. And then at a particular point, Chair, it would be the function that the asset has lost its value, it must be decommissioned. When it gets decommissioned, people are going to lose jobs, there's an impact on the system. But when you decommission it, there's going to be issues of environment. Those of us who have been changing some of these issues of resource planning, you will know there's going to be an impact on our soil, going to be an impact on our water, impact on the air. And whether sufficient planning in terms of insurance, in terms of environmental responsibility, if you plan for that, you don't want to create problems. Therefore, the weight, pace, speed, affordability, and environmental consideration, it applies to all sources, not to one. The global and local dynamics around the question of energy. We thought we should be able to give this. The scholars will know that our list is not exhaustive, but we chose to say what are the big issues when you look at this dynamic. One of the issues that is coming up is an environmental net, the levels of the greenhouse gas emissions. The biggest issue. There are those countries where you actually test the air, you test their water, you test their soil. These levels are not tolerable. Even in South Africa, there's been a recent report that has been issued. Then there's an issue of the liquefied natural gas. It's a matter that every country is looking at it because it's an important matter. Then there's an issue about oil and the demand, and even the price. Well, one of the things here, I was very uncomfortable. I come in and less than 5 days, I'm made to sign a document to increase fuel prices. It's not the right thing to do. And the market must move. That's how our law says that every Wednesday of, in the first month, of every month, the first Wednesday of every month, the determination has to be made. People, you know, it's very hard, and our people are feeling the heat. When you look at global energy demand and changes, in this case, they are trying to do projections to 2040. Little bit outside our planning horizon, but you should be able to say, we are part of the global community. Don't look at yourself. Look to say, what are we doing? One of the issues that they are saying that fossil fuel will remain very dominant, energy, continue to power the global economy and providing about 60% of energy growth. Later on, when we speak about South African situation, you will see that this figure more or less remains the same. Other countries, they have chosen, despite environmental issues, to say, you know what? Between development and environment, there is inherent tension. They are not mutually exclusive, but they are mutually dependent. There is always a debate between environmentalists and developers. When I used to do a record of decision on water check, I used to have a problem whether to say, should the license be given or not? But you will always have to balance, and it's not an easy balance. In the U.S. now, I met the Secretary of Energy, who was the first person I met here in Cape Town. He was very adamant. There's a big fight there. He said, NUSA and COP, they are moving ahead. Remember, because of their level of consumption, they did discover the gas. And these are the dynamics. It's always a healthy contestation. Natural gas is going to grow, and in South Africa we're looking at it. is why we're investing in terms of technology and every other thing with other departments. Oil, we don't have a choice unless we find an alternative. Currently, oil is the biggest input in terms of our essentials, in terms of transportation, chemicals, and manufacturing. Coal is going to slow down. Why gas is going to be replacing coal? The reason why coal is going to be coming down is because of the pressure we put on the basis of the impact that is there in the environment. Both in terms of air, in terms of water, you must see me. Let alone South Africa's issue, where those guys were in upper state, they very well, because you can't have the land and you don't have the source close by. That's why if you are from Kumaranga like me, you will always matter power station, matter collar, a great power station, bridge forward. That's how it works, because it's about to do with issues of source availability and another dynamic. But if coal is going to take this check, the question of technology is going to be an important issue. If the turbines can be resistant, use less water, less production of salt and other issues, then we should be in a position to say, well, it still has a place to play. But there are these considerations that are putting pressure on it as a source. Nuclear is part of what we have. There are debates, but it's part of the natural environment. It's not actually even nuclear, it's about uranium and the other minerals that produces the enriched uranium uranium. Renewables are going to grow. They are going to grow because they are renewable by its own definition. But then there's a question of the availability. What is your endowment? Then there's an issue of demand. The demand will remain resilient and reliant. Therefore, sufficient infrastructure. You can't say you don't invest in infrastructure. Investment must happen now. But you need to be more considerate. At what speed, at what pace, at what cost. Then the issues of the global increase in energy for power generation and the global issues around electricity. There's an African situation about the rollout. There is something that is going to come to the other sectors of energy that is going to be a pressure. Chair, I know we have raised the question of refineries and the issues of clean energy. There is an issue of a pressure because of consideration in terms of efficiency and emissions. Clean fuels too, then we are actually making the regulation. Is going to have an impact on the existing system. Existing refineries and so forth in the capacity. Then the issues around importation of wealth, impacting on the balance of payment and compromising the opportunity to create jobs in refinery activity. Remember, South Africa is one of the biggest oil, net oil importing countries. And in that dynamics, if you continue to do that, especially in the current global environment and the implications there, probably one day, if the endowments are found, we could be in a position to produce our own. Then there's an issue about the behavior of international oil companies, starting to move from primary products to secondary and tertiary products, looking at the whole value chain. Then the issue of the RP and others. What do you have as South Africa in the current system? Remember the slides, they talk to each other. In the current system, in terms of our natural endowment profile, your excellencies, those who are carrying slide, card copy, there's just a typo, then there's a correction on the figure. On the screen, the 47,000 megawatts is now written as 40,328. The pump storage is running at 1,332. The gas diesel is running at 2.245 megawatts. Wind 103. Renewables, which includes even the IPP. But it doesn't have to be very careful. How do we and get revenues. It's totally different. I could even see how we as a team were just done the combination. It's not the combination, it's really. Then you start giving us at 1.8 gigawatts or 1,800 megawatts. We thought we should be able to give that overview, because if we are not on the same point, what is government policy, what is government consideration, we'll have a wrong debate. On the big issues you raised, we'll start with the integrated energy plan and the integrated resource plan. We've deliberately chosen to use the weight energy integrated resource plan for the Republic of South Africa. Why do we actually add the weight energy? It could be any integrated resource plan. It could be water, it could be any other thing. But in the main, this one is energy related. We want to indicate that the plan by its own definition, the RT, is a coordinated schedule for generation expansion and demand-side intervention program. In other words, you will take into consideration multiple criteria to meet electricity demand. In other words, we have a resource. We have hydro, which is water, we have gas, we have coal, we have nuclear, we have solar, we have all these other things. But in other ways, how do you actually coordinate them in terms of pace, in terms of scale, in terms of affordability and environment? So let's take this from a planning point of view of the resource and utilization. We are closer to the dot in terms of planning. South Africa has an IRP, approved IRP. It was approved by our cabinet in 2011. But the time horizon of the RP approved is 2010 to 2020. And when you look at South Africa, the issues of electricity infrastructure planning was very clear and predictable, driven by population growth and GDP. I don't want to talk about the crunch that happened around 2008-9-10. The records are there. But the issues around GDP, they are very important when we look at it, not only on GDP, but also the other variables that contribute to GDP. The intense energy users, as you look at our current balance sheet, they are putting more technologies to improve efficiency. Remember, they are complaining because they are taking more or less about 40% of the consumption. And they are always complaining about price. They push very hard. But at the very same time, we also know that they have been having long apartheid incentives that were not set in terms of such. And it's a matter that at a particular point we should be able to discuss. Then the RP is a giving document. When there are changes in some of the variables and inputs, you must reconsider your planning. But when you reconsider the planning, it's more about the scheme. It's more about the scheduling of these things coming into the past. It's not about changing policy. You don't change policy. Then, if those revisions, they will tell you about scale, pace, it will tell you about scale, it will tell you about affordability, including issues of environmental technology comes to the past. This IRP, when it was looked at a particular point, it has something which is called a revised balance scenario. One of the technical terms. In other words, you create scenarios, you do simulations. And these scenarios, they were also looking at issues around post-optimal solution for new build options. In other words, the direct cost of new build power plants. Because all the time, you need to drive costs down. And then the balance was also in such a way that it must contribute to our national imperatives, job creation, skills development, participation of the majority of our people who are mostly black, and women and youth. Then there was a commitment made in terms of the rebalance scenario, that at the time of that IRP, and knowing how much we needed, because we knew that we needed more than 89,000 additional capacity. After we have added these other ones, we have taken the other ones out. Around megawatts as an addition into the system. And our decision, that has not been changed, but the new, the revised RFP will actually do the adjustment. It said to me at 9.6 gigawatts, which is famous, you know, as 9,600 megawatts. That's what we had projected. And we are also, they also had projected 6.3 gigawatts of coal, 11.4 gigawatts of renewables, and 11 gigawatts of other generation sources, because there are other guys from resource endowment point of view. The criteria that was used to come to do the rebalancing was on the basis that, one, their environmental consideration reduced the emissions, a very important matter. New technology uncertainty such as cost, operability, the time to build is a very important issue. Every time you say this, introduce it, you are on a fourth industrial revolution. Technology is going to be there. But do you know that if you introduce technology, you can improve efficiency, but it has unintended consequences. For a nation that is grappling with steel, a number of people are going to get out of the system. And the issues about the, you remember when the technology comes, it depends on the owner of the technology. If you import it, it's not yours, you don't adapt it in terms of IT, then at a particular point it's going to come at a very high cost. Ultimately, when you actually produce it on your own, you can be able to push the cost down. The issue of lead times is very important. You know the lead time is starting to tell you. If I put, let's say, a solar plant, depending on the magnitude of the plant and the size. Ordinarily, what is an average, what is the median to build it? If I put a coal plant, depending on the experience we did with Musile and Medupi, where we should respect the biggest challenges and inefficiencies now, we did some of the things. The last time we did a nuclear plant was many, many years ago. But internationally, how long does it take? The lead times are an important factor. Every time you do this thing, water will always be needed. How much water are you going to consume? And where will you get it? Some of these tenders, they look at the quality of water, the level of quality of water is not the same. But where will you also get this water, especially look at this province, the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, under the current our transformation issue. Let's never allow any bills to happen without creating jobs, increasing our skill base, increasing the access to economic opportunities by South Africans. But when we do the plan for South Africa, we are not in a vacuum. Historically, we are joined by the key with our neighboring states. We have an impact to plan for the region. Hence our own detail of SADC and the detail of the AU around the question of regional economic integration. And then lastly, on the same matter, you look at the question of security of supply. This plan had to change. Some adjustments had to be done. One of the adjustments in the figure we should do was to disaggregate renewables. Remember renewables and the issues around thermodynamics and thermophysics that you should look for. We are, for an example, to disaggregate solar into photovoltaic, which is PV. And if you look at the example of other countries, including the intensity of the radiation and the time that becomes available, then there's a concentration solar system, which is a CSP, and then wind options. The footprint of wind is not the same everywhere. You use it, and all are referred as intermittent. They always have their own dynamics. Normally, the sun is available during the day, and sometimes the peak in terms of use, in terms of domestic consumption, is normally in the evening and early hours of the morning. But for the biggest industries that drive the economies, normally in South Africa, which we went from for a particular point in time, you can't say end of the system, get into the other system. And then the issues of the learning rates and the durable. But ultimately, the nuclear units, an increase of 40% based on the research expenses. Then the additional issues that were there, as I said, installation of renewables is part of our system, don't wish them it away. But those who are proponents of renewables, don't wish the non-renewables away. It's part of our endowment. Every has positive, and all of them, they also have negative. Then given uncertainties and the cost of renewables as well. And given the question of the nuclear fleet of 9.6 as it was included in the RFP, and it would be included, but it's not about whether it's going to be 9.6 because we need to revise them downwards on the basis of our projection. Then there's an issue of the rebalance scenario where we have 275 million tons of carbon dioxide per year after 2024 is maintained. Remember, this is where we have actually made our instrument when we deposited them. Then the issue of energy efficient demand-side management. It is a very important issue, the management tool intervening into the system. If you look from a planning scenario planning point of view, in terms of resource mobilization and resource inputting into the system, in 2010 and until 2020, we said coal is going to constitute 90%, was constituting around 90%. We are going to reduce as a country to about 65%. If we are reducing to 65%, it does not mean the percentage will remain the same. But the volume might not be the same because it's going to be a percentage of the revised figure so that you can be able to do that. This is well informed from a resource planning point of view and resource economic planning. Nuclear, 5%, it will grow up to 20%. Hydro, 5%, it will remain at 5%. The difference about the 5% and the 5% is insignificant because when it comes to hydro, which is water, we are going to have to import it. Remember, we are not blessed with the abundance of water. Hence our engagement with our regional sister country called the DRC. We are not going to be bringing water here. We'll be bringing energy itself. In other words, put lines, put servitudes, and all these other things. And it will give you a particular figure. At this stage, I'm not going to share the figure because I still have to go to cabinet with the revised RFP. But the percentage is very minuscule. Gas is going to come to the party. Remember, we are not endowed with gas. In the main, we do have some elements of gas. But remember, our part of the region, we need to grow that particular strength. It's going to increase from 0% to 1%. And then when you look at the peak open cycle gas terminals, you know those ones that normally inconsistent, not there all the time. For other particular schemes and specifications, it will remain at less than 0.1%. Renewables in totality, I don't mean IPPs, I mean renewables in terms of source. It will increase from 0% to 9%. And you know after our difficulties in 2010, already renewables are already in the system. If you look at the other slide that I presented earlier on, it started to tell you we have already moved from 0%. But ultimately, in that horizon, we are looking at 9%. Then the plan is about the new generation capacity, taking into account the issues of affordability, which is cost optimization, promoting job creation, transformation, environment, which is the mitigation of adverse climate changes. Where are we right now with the RFP? We have said it's a living plan. And in terms of the cabinet decision, a particular interval where there are changes in terms of certain things, you will update it. What has necessitated the current review? The current review has been necessitated because there's been a lower demand because of the economic downturn. You can't say you will continue to do 9.6 of nuclear, you are going to do 11 point something of coal when the economy has done the downturn. And you need to be able to manage that. There's been drought in our region. And we also know that there's an additional capacity that is coming into the system. Remember, Australia, Duke and others have came into the system. We have not actually fully realized, but in terms of our horizon, we will know. But in other plants that are already in the system, they are not actually operating and performing 100%. It's a different variance in terms of the plants that are there. Then is environmental obligation. It became an issue that it had to be taken into account, and the changes in technology. What is very important as a fundamental issue, the current revision, the reference point is RP 2010-2028. RP 2010-2028 were to create a baseline, a reference point, which is, even if you do your own budgeting, you use your base budgeting, the same principle can apply. But what is important in the current IRP, which has been presented in public, is that the objectives remain the same. The fundamentals, they don't change. The only thing that will change is anything. Your pace, your scale, your affordability. That's what's going to change. In other words, what are the fundamentals? The fundamentals are the security of supply, affordability of cost, of electricity, job creation, localization, minimal negative environmental impact, minimal water use, diversity of supply, which is a mixed energy solution, and promotion of energy access. There are still people in this country and in our region who don't have access to electricity for other things. Therefore, we can't say when we have not lit and made a difference to people's homes. Because if you bring electricity to someone's home, one, the young girl and our mother, that must walk distances to fetch the woodlock. The dangers of walking those length distances. Taking a woodlock that they can be actually be told that they're trespassing, they will have more time to use for other things to develop themselves and participate as people too. Instead of using woodlot to burn and actually create energy and be producing more smoke and destroying our eyes. We don't want someone who's always in a roller bed, their eyes are exposed to this thing all the time. The health budget, it has become much easier. These people can be able to study where there is electricity. The issues around their respiratory organs that gets affected, it changes life. There are those people who are not like you and me, who have an access, and those are the people we still have to reach to them too. There are people too, or there are human too. Then the question of the review is taking assumptions. Remember, we made assumptions. Rebalancing scenarios. One of the assumptions is developing a base case. The base case will then deal with those technical issues. Then there's a question of modeling, an analysis scenario, and then finally the final plan that cabinet will approve. When the revised RP was approved by cabinet in October last year for public consultation purposes. And then it was subsequent in terms of process point of view, gazetted in November 2016. From December and March 2017, the department went around the country engaged with South Africa. There was even publication check. You know, sometimes Umaga to better something out now. They give you proof, you know, public notice. The radios were used, department to bring these inputs together, remember whether they are material or not material. The next process goes to cabinet. April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 months. When I come in and say, why have you not finalized the consolidation of inputs? We've listened with me. Why, what you wake up and do when you have that consolidation is there? There are others who have other ideas. The reason is it has taken long, unnecessary and unacceptable. We have received everything. It takes you more than 7-8 months just to put it together. Is this the performance we want of government? When I'm saying let's move, we don't have time. You got to inquire rushing. It's important to conclude so that they study it. Anyone wants to invest, they must tell you to say, but in terms of the RBS, what does it mean for me? Is worth to come in here. But there are those people who are still waiting for image. And they can't wait longer. It can't be a debate unless you have other motives. Say energy security is not a bottleneck. It's a matter for development, it's a matter for security, it's a matter for stability. Those who love prosperity. We can't be champions of one thing over the other. But we also have to feel that we have to be held accountable. Because our actions, remember, people are funding, they can do funny things. We need to keep a check on them. It's the right thing to do. But it can't just be a check which is obstructionist. I'm aiming, Chair, that I would want to go to cabinet before the end of, before cabinet closes. I want to go to cabinet now that I'm here today. Around the, after the 5th or the 6th of December, we have an energy dialogue that will invite the members of our committee, like which party to you, Chair. I'll go to the ANC, my home, in December, because they got the money from our people. They must say, you know what, they are on the right side. I want to implement my policy. ANC won elections. They put a pledge to the country. The country by saying, no, we agree. That's how I will move. And when my party is on board, we move. But the process of bringing the nation to confidence is an important imperative. I think that's how the RP issues look like. There is something called Integrated Energy Plan for South Africa. In the main, this is an overarching master plan. It's an overarching master plan. From a resource planning point of view, you need to have a master plan. And what does the master plan normally take into consideration? Firstly, this integrated energy plan is a requirement by our own laws. The law, which is the National Energy Act, 34 of 2008, it says that we must have a coordinated energy plan combining the constraints and capabilities of alternative energy carriers to meet the country's energy needs. The master plan, it gives you the roadmap of the future energy landscape for our country. We map it so that we can say this is our architecture. It also provides guidance on infrastructure investment opportunity, including policy certainty. It also looks at microeconomic environment, technological advances as well in the fourth industrial revolution. It looks at environment, it looks at climate change imperatives, but more importantly, it looks at the question of national priorities and national interests. Remember, energy has an economic component. But energy has a security component. For your own sovereignty as people and as a nation, and for your own national interest, there is a security component. But lastly, it has a political component. It can be used as a tool around the question of geopolitics, happening in the world. And we must never lose the sense of the three legs. Very important. What does the IIEP in the main seek to do? 8 points. There must be the security of supply. We must guarantee. And if we can't guarantee, the implications are huge. But the issue of price, the Comrade Chair and Honourable Chair, affordability, we must drive prices down, but without killing business. And if you don't drive them down, other countries are going to offer a better price. Remember, investors, they choose where they go. They choose. Even your own domestic investors, if you hold this thing, if price is becoming a constraint, what do they do? Let alone the people are dependent on the state. Every time you increase this, every time you increase this, when you increase that, the food prices go up, transport prices are going up, everything goes up. In other words, the present value of our net asset, it diminishes all the time, or including the future value, because it means nothing. Therefore, if the prices are not managed, check is the biggest issue. Create jobs, create skills, localize, beneficiate, look at climate, minimize negative impact, water conservation, energy mix, in other words, diversify supply sources and primary sources of energy, energy efficiency in the economy, and increase access. If you look at all the plans, there is consistency in message. When the message is very consistent, there is an alignment. Therefore, it creates certainty that there is no uncertainty around COVID. Probably, we are all energy champions, because energy is the only thing that drives us for our prosperity. We are done with the IEP, Comrade Chair. On the question of oil and gas, you asked us to look at the matter of infuels and refinery capability. But it is something that we thought we need to bring to the nation, and to yourself as the representative of our people. There are facts we can't change unless we do other options. One fact, South Africa was a net oil and gas importing country. It's a fact. That's where we are. But you do have our offshore acreage that we need to explore. We've been unfortunate in the past when money was used, you couldn't find that one. Probably our technical acumen of using sensors and other technologies to be definitely sure. But we have to be an oil and gas producing country. There is. The maps are saying that. They are saying that in as much as there might be other people who are interested, for our own sovereignty as people, and deal with the shocks of the other people. If you have an asset yourself, you dictate terms. But if you are a consumer, you have limited leverage. There is also, if you look at growing optimism about the potential of Africa's oil and gas development, given the sustained increase in the crude oil prices. This bodes well for many of the continent's economies that have suffered where there was a downturn in commodity prices. You know, we held an Africa Oil Week here. One of the biggest challenges for Africa is to improve our knowledge system, our own information. We go into the Africa Oil Week, other people who have all the technology and knowledge, they came into our house called Africa. We know, Chair, they were telling us, your wife is pregnant. They're going to give twins or triplets. Whether our children are hungry, whether they're suffering. Until we improve on our technical knowledge, we'll always be dependent on other people's terms. People were presenting about Africa from other shores. And finally, we come in there, we open, we read our speech. Then it can't be. That's why we must produce our own people in top and speed. So if these are the old people that who actually believe in ourselves, they will find our endowment, keep our knowledge and systems. We are protest that they check. Yeah, it's the biggest protest I have. Net oil importing countries like ourselves, we have enjoyed the benefit of lower oil prices, but we are at the same time impacted by the downturn in the commodity prices such as iron ore and platinum groups. But lately, the prices are going up. And when they are going up because they are importing, we are starting to feel the pinch. Then the other thing around, there is politics around this question of oil and gas. There is a lot of rhetoric, once again. It has an impact on the prices of oil other than the normal market forces. Have you seen the challenges in the Gulf region? The challenges in the Gulf region has actually made to actually the prices to spike. You saw the challenges in the current peninsula. Some people are doing certain things, they're putting up the air, the temperature. They have an impact. Other than the issues of environment, where some of the refineries and so forth were affected. But the rhetoric, politics has an impact. And then the issues around oil and gas is very important to the world. It's a valuable commodity. It consumes the major sources of revenue for governments and corporations that control production and distribution. Whoever is blessed with an endowment, you use it for your advantage. Remember Angola, remember Ghana, remember the others that are depending on oil, including Nigeria. But there are those other countries because it looks like the creator never gave us the same thing. Other than one advantage, other than the other one. And nations must be able to say, what is our strength? This one, those who are actually having this endowment, they use it for their own revenues and they detect our their own terms. They derive their vast revenue from oil sales. Other corporations and private firms use it as a political, economic, and security tool for import. It can be used. They shut the door for you this time. We are able to actually vouch or not vouch. Therefore, the question of control and ownership of this natural endowment also controls the revenue collection and allocation. And it can translate into a job total south for some, but it can also become an economic vulnerability for others. We must never lose the oil. Those who have, they have an edge. Those who don't, we are like teasers. We are carrying we are actually getting offerings. You can't choose how much they can offer you. Therefore, we are dependent on energy. We thought we should be able to raise this one without going into too much details. We are into the NDP. Our fundamentals of economic growth and adequate investment in this thing is very important, especially the infrastructure. The local production is very important here. Remember, if we're going to advance our capacity, but also advance our transformation goals, there has to be local production. Then there is the issue of social equity. One of the things, this is the biggest sector check. You know, it's one of the biggest sector, only few people are participating in. Very few. It drives the GDP to more than 80%. It's the biggest input. And normally people who work in this sector, they speak in harsh tones. They don't want to know that we have to be one after, you know? And it's a matter that energy must make it a national issue. Everybody to know. The decisions that are being made, the players that are being made, because this sector too, it must be used as an instrument for equity, redress. Then the issue of environment. Then there is a new issue that is coming out. South Africa, where do you stand in terms of refineries? Currently, we have six. Four of which are crude oil refineries. Our country imports an increasing share of refined products. Remember, if you're an oil producing country, they tell you don't build refineries. In other words, they only be involved at the primary level. Your product goes to another country, they do some additions, they add value into this thing, they bring the product back, you pay it at a higher price. social injustices that can't proceed. And South Africa were not exempt in terms of the product. That's one issue. The second issue is that in terms of South Africa, in terms of technology, we are on CF1, which is CIN21, which is equivalent to a specification in terms of technology. Your technology is a factor here to Euro 3 for liquid fuel specification. Remember what we police. The policy so that you can actually clean fuels chair, we must upgrade from CF1 to CF2. CF2 is equivalent to Euro 5 specification. If this technology comes into the pack, what does it mean? It means there must be massive investment, one, to convert the existing refineries so that they can meet the new specification. It doesn't matter, including the electricity issues, whether you want to put turbines, you want to put nuclear reactors, technology is an issue. And immediately increase the technology has an impact on the current assets. And this is the debate and discussion. When we met with the South African Petroleum Industry Association, one of the issues is coming up in our discussion. Minister, what is government plan on refineries? That's where the discussion started. You could see it's a discussion of interest. But you said, no, let's calm down, let's have a proper discussion. In the day, they are of the view that government must come to the party because government is introducing new regulation and requirements. We don't introduce these regulations because we like to do, but it's the right thing to do. Because these refineries, those who are in their venture, you know those emissions that are there. By a car, but also the taking up in other areas. And we can't be killing people on the basis that we want to maximize profit. And that's the role of the state intervene. But they are of the view that we must be able to do an investment to upgrade, and the upgrades have been commissioned. We have not made the decision, but we are very reluctant at this stage to say we want to do an investment for privatization. We can only create an enabling condition. The upgrade in terms of our data of the current refineries, we are looking at 40 billion. And it involves about 24 billion liters of liquid fuel, which are sold annually. So it can be partially funded by some type of elite. That's the discussion. It's not a matter concluded. The last time we met, more than two and a half weeks ago, we agree we'll have a further discussion. By the time we go to energy in our chair, we'll firm up our views. But ultimately, we'll go to our movement and say, this is what people are saying. Then we should be able to get guidance when we move. But other things that I want to discuss is to say, really, should we put so much money into this thing? When you put so much money into the thing, you can only improve efficiency. But does it improve capacity check? The answer is no. Even if there is some efficiency, it could just be not of material change, because it depends on that. But probably we are of the view that, we're not sure of the view, we are going to build additional capacity. We're going to build additional capacity for various reasons. One of the reasons is about security. We can't be at any point be running out of our capital, of our oil and gas capability. We can't, any nation. If a calamity was going to happen, I know people want to ask, where is the stock? And even if the stock was there, for how many days can you have? That's one. But second, we're going to increase the capacity because we want South Africa to participate, new and then. It's the right thing to do. They can't be, when they are docking there, they bought the products from other countries, they are sitting in our ports. Someone is telling them that, you know what, you can't dock because Nobody can guarantee you that today is your schedule to get your product to be taken. It's a big no. With transformation is a must. But probably the scale of transformation can be negotiated. But we can't negotiate that, we must transform into. We are looking at 200,000 barrels per day, a figure of 10 billion that could be structured in terms of senior debt and liquid rather than spending on subsidizing this one. There is always an issue that we don't normally talk. You know, the new entrants must also be supported that they don't make mistakes. You know, people, when they start to sell an asset, you must ask them, you ask yourself a question, why are they selling an asset? Will the assets be still having value on the basis of your investment so that you can still get a return on your assets? Those people who once bought mines in the past, some mines were being sold, but people knew that a lot of other hidden costs were there, and we never provided the sufficient support to the state. The environmental costs were very high, the issues of technology that was coming in, they could not afford, all these other issues. And in the same way, around this set, we'll keep an eye that the value of a depreciating asset that is extraordinarily absolute is not pushed to an emerging entrance. The dividend petrol prices are calculated, and we raise this issue because I want to come back to you and discuss a fundamental issue. There's an issue about the formula, there's also an issue about how we use certain prices check. The issue around the price of diesel and petrol, which in terms of equivalent base and product available in Europe, Saudi Arabia, and the refinery, and how we're actually using base cost of Euro 5. But it's a discussion that we're going to take because it's a matter that we think there are issues to be resolved. Then we also have to give the option of importing the vis-a-vis local production and the question that South Africa was not interested in the new refinery would do. The next slide, I'm not going to go through it, is around the question of volumes in terms of production, the blue one. The consumption is the fuel sales volumes, and the diesel is the same. I've spoken on the issues about what's happening there, and the question that South Africa is a tipping point regarding its refinery capability. Remember, the refinery is the check in terms of age analysis in the mean around 20 years and above, and the issues of petrol estate. Who are the players at this point? The players, you have them there, in the main is multinationals. We have Chevron, we have Shell, we have Beyond Petroleum. Then there is South African oil company called Petro Estate. You see them there, highlighted in red. We have Engen, we have Total, and Sosol. Sosol, in the main, you know that it uses our company, our shareholding. Is not as much as it used to. But what does the story tell you about footprint, about impact? In terms of footprint, what is the capability? The capability, the other one, is holding 100,000 barrels per day. We saw sort of the highest level of 220,000 barrels per day. And our own petrol estate, our instrument to change the status quo, only the capacity of 45,000 barrels per day. But where is our presence? Are we present everywhere in terms of footprint, in terms of mapping? If we look at our homes, we can be very dim, very dim. There is no presence, very little said. But if we look at the question of commission presence, because the state must be equalized. You know, the state must come in on behalf of the people, create some regulatory environment, it's very limited. The others are all there. Lubricants. Do we have them? And it looks like we have a problem. Do we produce other products? So the in other words, we are dependent on these big corporations. And remember, whoever has it has the clout how to use it. And then the refueling capacity, you could see. That's the story of our country that looks like. And in terms of going forward, we need to change the story. And it should be the story of South African people when they feel they too have a part in their own economy. We are looking at policy options, Chair. I'm using the word carefully options. It's a matter for further discussion, both by South Africans and our region. We have BRICS for the region and our continent. We are looking at that. A new refinery minister with an access to the market. We need to diversify, because when you do that, you expand yourself out. You can't be able to get the price at the right level. It's just economy. It's not about who we like and who we don't like. You open up at your own terms, you can push the price down. Mega infrastructure projects will support other industries in the country and create new jobs. Policy decision to build or not to build a new refinery is pronounced through the integrated energy plan. And then policy decisions around the single boy mooring, SBM, and the vessels in the Devonport, the issues are up. There's something we're discussing in the Department of Transport. Bigger issues. We know that some of the KBs, they are outgoing. And we should be able to use that for the chair as an instrument to include our people. But our people must support us. Never including over to tell our contracts. City those must go deep. Because remember, these are long-term contracts. And that force is controlled by the state. And if the state can't say, you know what, let's do some adjustments, without saying that the older ones must go away, they are still having a role to play. But they need to open up. There is something called renewables and independent power producers. You ask us to speak to it. We have said the IPP is about independent power producers at a given tariff. And we know that the biggest interest in this point is about window 3.5 and 4 projects. When is the minister signing it? And this issue of IPPs, they can't be for negotiation. IPPs is a policy of government. It has not changed. It's going to proceed. It's going to proceed. We can't negotiate policy. Renewables, we can't negotiate them, Chair. They are going to happen, and they are happening. The only thing we're going to negotiate, like any other thing, what is the pace, what is the scale, and what is the affordability? That's the only thing I wanted to discuss. And on this one, as I've said, we have a discussion with the Minister of Public Enterprise and ESCOM. We are signing this one. But we are not going to be put a gun on our head. There is some things that after we introduce IPPs and renewables into the system, we must learn. One of the things that we have learned is an unfortunate story. When you, as South Africans, you demonstrated that you are desperate. When you introduced them during the crisis time, you never framed out the issues of South African participation. South African participation in this window change. We must be ashamed if we put at 40%. We have, but the nice thing that they are negotiating, these people are saying, no, we can improve. But if you accept respect to nation, remember, there are people who can produce the technology here in our own shops. That's the issue I'm talking about. The issue around price. Remember when the system came in, the prices were high. The more you expand the volume and access, technology improvement, the prices are slowly coming down. Whether they are comparative or not, I don't want to pass a judgment. I'm not a minister of one energy option over the other. I'm a minister of mixed energy solution. Even if I put in a red tie, we're saying when you say put it together. by Minister of Energy. Those who are for nuclear, those who are for coal, there are people who think that you must shut down one and promote the other. It's not going to happen. Because it's not about something you go to a shop and choose. It's not about what you find in a shop. It's about assets. And assets must be utilized. Then the issue of greenhouse emissions, we raise them there. And all these other technical issues, there is always a story we must discuss. Public power generation vis-a-vis independent power producers. Remember, we've chosen both models. But we've reached a point that we need to be able to say how much of public and how much of independent power producers we need to do. We just have to be very certain how we do it without saying the other one must have an edge, the other one must not have an edge. And you can also kill Eskom that has been there for more than 100 years, powering the nation in as much as a particular body powered only few people. But then the current challenges they face must be addressed. We jump this thing of IT fees and renewables, I think it's fine now. Clearly, before the end of this month, we should make a decision, Chair. I know other people were saying, if we don't make this decision, this is what is going to happen. I don't want to be threatened. We'll do it because it's the right thing to do. We know when it comes to image, they are lobbies. They are lobbies. They lobby for one thing or the other. And this is why our agility to be persuaded and to persuade them. But ultimately, what we make, when we make the decision, is not for certain people, it's for our country. Let's talk nuclear. There is politics about nuclear. There is economy about nuclear. There is also environment about nuclear. And there is national security. We must remember that nuclear industry has over decades been an integral part of the world's economic development. It's a fact. It's not a fiction. Evolving from import to export-oriented industry, providing central impetus to technological innovation, as well as to socio-economic development such as infrastructure, health, and education. The multifaceted nature of energy policy requires for such an economic, social, and environmental concerns to be considered in energy planning. There are therefore different sets of variables that inform energy planning nationally, regionally, and globally, and there cannot be a one-size-fits-all approach. The terrain is not the same. The conditions are not the same. We are the first country, as you will remember, when people don't want us to talk about it. They think nuclear is a new thing. It was there. Some people, they thought, you know what, they are dangerous people like Comrade Bates, all our rules and money, that will take the country. Don't give them nuclear. They said, no, don't give them. And we chose a path as people in the relation. Nuclear must never be used for the destruction of the world. We had an experience during the World War II. We know what happened in the ocean. We need that. But I also think there are people who think that nuclear arsenals, they are in the safe hands of other people must not have. As South Africans, we have always been sober people, very clear. No hands are safe. There are no hands are safe, whether we are a small or a big country, that we need to possess nuclear arsenals. That's why we choose to voluntarily disarm, sign a treaty. One of my advisors, that is the Dr. Silvio, they sit on this committee. We don't want that. But at the very same time, we must also agree that nuclear products, has made a lot of advances for humanity. Let's never deny it. But there are concerns, and the concerns must never be dismissed. Those of you who have come, honorable members, you can read the story and the politics. The problem is where this parliament is sitting here. We are when this plant was put in there, they were not bored. But this plant has been there for more than 3 years. Where are we? This thing about nuke is part of a dam which is supposed to be there. We mine extra uranium. There's been a process of issuing of an environmental EIA approval. We know that it's subjected to a particular process. There's another process to run its course. But what does it say? It says additional capacity that we think it must be given of about 4,000. Are we going to build the 4,000? At this stage, we still have to know what is the pace, scale, and affordability. That's what we need to deal with. Not only for you, but for every other thing. You don't use one standard for one, and don't use the same standard for the other. We must know that the role of nuclear power is ensuring security of energy supply and meeting the challenges of climate change. We promote, it's a retaliation, energy mix of coal, gas, and renewables and nuclear. Each of these options, I repeat, has their role. Some of the energy sources are intermittent supply, while others, such as nuclear and coal, are based on supply. We know that we talk about 1,800 when we showed you the balance sheet in terms of energy. The IRP that was approved 2010-2080 spoke about 9,600 megawatts or 9.6 gigawatts as this, and probably it must be revised down like all others because we're all revising them down for 2080. Well, there are many people who actually be able to, they've done some calculations, CEO, Ceylon Rand. Probably we'll stop when we talk about the cost. I'm not going to speak, Chair, with respect to the outcome of the Western Cape High Court. The Western Cape High Court, simply to say, it never made a decision to say you can't do a nuclear power generation. It never said so. It said the process for it was flawed. It could not stand the legal instruments of our times. That's what it says. At this stage, I'm not going to tell how we're going to go through that. First thing first, RP conclude. When we have concluded RP, in the interim before the RP is concluded, I'm concluding the renewables B3.5 and 4. When the RP revised one is approved by cabinet, whether it is coal, whether it is gas, whether it is nuclear, whether it is renewables, we are starting applying to all of them. Pace, scale, affordability, all of them, without exception. That's what is concluded. We just concluding the obligations on the table. And I'm not going to speak to this other one because someone is taking us to court, because someone is jumping. Hey, stop him from doing new. We're not there. It's a new court. But it's okay to be there. So when I'm going to have to our horses at politics, we'll discuss it. But let's bring the nation across. Then there's something about nuclear share that is important. Very important. Very important. There is an impact around climate change. There is an impact of introduction of new technologies. Remember, we have nuclear reactors. Remember, nuclear reactors are the technology to our system about efficiencies and so forth. There is development by a group for international forum. Remember, all the nuclear countries that have the power station, whether US, whether it's Russia, China, us, every group. We met here. Our scientists are working so hard to improve safety, to improve and reduce emissions and so forth, and drive the cost down. Currently, they're looking at nuclear reactor 4 and 5. And we're part of that. And South African scientists, they are working so hard, including the young people that have been trained all over the world. And it's an important issue, technology. But then there's a question of IP. Who owns it? Because it can't be in the wrong hands. We have got to look at the land and cause trouble to you. And these are the security considerations we need. Remember, there was the Pepper Modular Reactor Project 2010. You remember? It had to be called off. And we are still discussing to say, this is one of the people that were there, scientists, South Africans, that were trying to find solutions. Remember for NH, all the technology, we have an institute here called SANEC. SANEC must be at the cutting edge. And remember, to be a sovereign state, possess your own knowledge, supported by other institutions like CSR, academics, and so forth. How do we actually use that as a cutting edge? Technology, as long as you don't own it, you don't develop it, you will have a big price to pay, one, in terms of the prices. But you can actually pay the biggest price around the question of security. You know, countries, if they are behaving in this funny way, you know that they can hack your system. They don't have to bring soldiers to deal with you. They can hack your system, make your system to fail. And they are just funny people who are playing in the net all the time. They play with the net, they get you into the net side of your system. They play around, the system actually causes problems. And these are the things we need to be able to look for. Therefore, the issues around reactors, technology, and in the main, to assist efficiency, comply with our environmental obligations, the right thing to do, but also work on prices. I think those are the things that I thought we should share. But there is a slide that is an important slide. It's an important slide. Those people who have a narrow scope and a narrow thinking about the possibilities at our hands around the prospect nuclear homes, not only homes that have brought to humanity, despite the other concerns we have. That's how the slide looks like. Industrial application. One day, probably, we need to take one energy source over one energy source at a time. Look at the whole value chain. Where do you get the source? How do you extract it? How do you process it? How do you do this thing? And it could be a very interesting discussion. But those today, because Andrew Book is there, or Andrew Book is there, and other research institutions, go and check the abundance of opportunities around industrial application. That is a question of medical diagnosis and therapy. You know, people, they don't even know that we are using Mercury and other things. Remember, even if you are using the thermometer and the other hospital in Gauteng, where he's the President Zuma and the Minister of Health, Poverty and Quality, they were there. You can be amazed how isotopes, those atoms, they play a role in our lives. Then there's an issue of beneficiation. But then there's also the issue around nuclear waste. Nuclear waste must be managed, it must be treated, it must be stored. That is the major issue I talked about. Funny people want to stockpile. The issue of non-proliferation of nuclear materials. Then there's the question around manufacturing. Then there's the issue of inhibit. Our one is a particular point, probably one of the things government has never tried is to take the nation into confidence in terms of civic education and awareness. Well, the problem of our scientists is they want to speak to themselves. When you are trying to teach scientists, can you speak to me in the language they could appreciate? Because it's not nice to win ideas, but you lose people. Our duty is to win people over. Well, there are those who never win because of their fixated positions. But every session we have, let's pick one of them. But I think it's an important time. The issue of cost, then I'm about to go to the chair. It's a big deal. Where do we start? I'm not going to speak about trillions. It's not my speech. affirm that energy is a catalyst and an enabler of economic growth, peace, stability, and development. And if we agree on those principles, at least we can have a decent conversation. The cost of energy should be affordable to the poorest of the poor, but competitive to promote growth and boost investor confidence. I don't think it's a point to fight. We can discuss the mechanism, but the principle looks noble. South Africa, when it comes to energy cost, we have a strong regulatory mechanism. Your regulatory mechanism is not only admired only in South Africa, both in the region and in the continent, even in the West. We have developed strong regulatory mechanisms. Our laws are sound, but including the men and women who are working there, professionals, high integrity, but more importantly, knowledgeable. They represent us all over the world. We are very proud of them. Then when it comes to cost, don't talk about cost outside the implementation framework of pace, which is time, gauge, which is volume and demand, affordability and climate change. It has an impact. Don't go to the value chain and choose one point. You will actually materially does a misstatement or misrepresentation. The cost of energy must be assessed as a whole throughout the energy value chain to avoid any distortion. We must use the mantra from the cradle to grave, i.e. source, infrastructure build, operation, maintenance, and decommission. What do we mean? The first question you must ask, where do I get the source? Just to exploit or explore the source, there's a lot of economic activity that must happen, including the volume of the source. Then there's an issue of the plant itself, that it must be there, it must be built, there are cost implications. Then there's a time when the plant must operate. You start the engine, you start the turbine, you start the reactor. But someone must start to receive the energy. You must transport it, you must consume it. Maintain the asset, manage the asset. There is a time when the asset must go off, decommission it. It has issues around decommissioning cost. It has implications on environmental cost that we normally don't get it right in terms of resource planning. And leave people when the industry is gone with something that we leave it for future generations. That's how cost must be looked at. And I don't think it's something we can disagree to say, let's look at the whole. Because if we look at one point of the system, you will create distortions. We need to look at also the grid-based power stage, the power base, and the off-grid power base. I will not go to the details, but I think the point of reference in theory and the economies must be the right one. As I said, there are these other figures that are there. Advantage, I can't see this thing completely, so there's something written down there on the exercises, a footnote, but I'll do my class the next time. But the issues around that can cost divided by the energy production, the calculation of the present value of the total cost of building operating a power plant over an assumed lifetime. Allow the comparison of different technologies. Technology is also a very big issue in the system. Wind, solar, natural gas, of unequal life spans, project size, differentiated capital cost, risk, return, and capabilities. Critical to making an informed decision and approach with the development of capacity community, commercial scale, and project. The slide you have before engage if you want to engage. We have decided to actually give principles. We don't want to jump at this stage to say how much is the next renewable going to cost? How much is the next user going to cost? How much? We're not going to do that because it has never been the narrative of the department or government. already finished the plan. And we have agreed that when the plan is adopted, whether we are putting coal, those volumes you spoke about, whether we are putting what, we are going to do the calculation backwards now, from 2030 to 2017, 2018, or 2018, 2019. That's how we're going to do. We are getting at a project level. At the project level, remember the issue of pace. If the power stations are going to be decommissioned around 24, 25, 26, we are not going to start to build in year 24, 25, 26. Any build program, it takes time just to do the design. Let alone funding the funding model. Let alone starting. There's increment wherever there's this changes in price. We know we did a 2020 World Cup. That's our experience. We've done it, we've done to see that we have an experience. And the lead times. When we're done, we'll be able to say in 2018, 2019, 2020, until 2020. We'll do that for each project. But as we say, the energy sources are not going to change. It's because the creator gave us. But we're not going to actually defeat all of them by 2030. There are going to be people who are going to live beyond 2030. Our children, they still have to find these resources checked. Because why should they inherit an earth that is a death room? Who are done with the issues of cost? The last one is the repositioning of the CSF. This one I'm not going to go into detail. Safe to say that the repositioning of CSF, I still have to apply my mind. This is a big portfolio. I've not seen every book. Remember, ultimately, I'm the executive authority. We can take a moment at this. And I must be sure. But what I know is that there are immediate issues that we need to deal with. The repositioning, I know, is one of the issues that I need to look at applying my mind at this stage. But immediate issues for all state-owned companies. Last week, I had a chance to be chairing the IMC on behalf of Israel selling to the Deputy President. We were concluding a work that has been happening over time. That the state of our own companies, instead of becoming an enabler and assist government to achieve its objectives, the manner we can be some of our business, we can't be proud. When it comes to CSF and the other entities, one of the major issues is to the stabilization of administration and government. The administration chair, a number of them, the internal boards, we need stable, they need a board there. And they mixed these issues. Secondly, there are too many people who buy health and much stable who are for acting CEO, acting this. The instruction is stay engaged in the recruitment process, stabilize the administration. Well, the other thing that I'm also looking at is that, you know, they should have performed much better. If you look at the slide of Petro S.A. chair, you know Petro S.A. should be a lead, not only for us, but for the continent. But you look at it, it's a challenge. We are starting to say, how do we get more opportunities for them, especially using our continent. Opportunities in Nigeria, Senegal, Equatorial Guinea, look at Mozambique, look at Angola, look at Ghana, South Sudan. This is where we are saying, you know what, let's get them to move out there. So the balance sheet can look at much more difficult different. But as I'm saying, your main question, check, repositioning, I've not arrived at that position. I need time that you come back and after we've applied our mind. Because you must reposition an organization so that it is fit for the object while it was established, whether the performance is at the level. But it does not mean there are no immediate issues. One of the immediate issues is something that has been in the country is called the entity called Strategic Welfare. It has been in the media for a number of reasons. You are correct to put in two BTS and seconded there to assist. But we arrive at a point where our national, our asset called the strategic reserve that was there has been taken. I don't know English. Others they say it's rotation, others they say it's safe. I don't know in between what. But they really see an investigation has been done. The investigation should have been completed in December. But now it's late December. Something unacceptable. I thought I would make decisions early, but I've been confronted by the situation. One, the service provider did something very bad. It makes findings about people and saying people must be brought to book. But it does not respect natural laws of justice called auditor bad faith, hearing the other side. They finalize the report, they don't speak to people. After they finalize the report, they don't speak to people. In the meeting, when I'm asking difficult questions, they wake up and say, we're in conflict of interest. Yeah, we're competent now. a very, very interesting dialogue. Traders on the other side, no, 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 we have a contract, what we need. But then there's national security issue. If something happens today, do we have sufficient proof? What will we do? The proof that was stolen. I don't want to get into this because the negotiations are at a sensitive stage. What will happen is that a decision is going to be made. We have to be able to get people to complete an investigation that will act without conflict of interest, but that the report can stand the test. You receive a report check, it has 5 pages of this game. 5 pages. And when I'm talking about a report that you can't use it in other platforms, how do you place the reliance on it? The legal part of the report. Then there's the financial part of the report, because the financial part of the report, you want to see whether the state was negatively affected or not, whether there was an undue influence. The report was done by KMG. When you say KMG, there are issues in the country. And to use KMG report without doing a reliance on it is pretty big, getting it in ice. To bring PwC to assist us to go through that part. But the legal part is a bit of a problem. Now, we are going to make a decision. The decision we are going to make, others are going to be angry, others are going to be happy. In other words, we don't make a decision with them, it will do what we want. The problem is this decision doesn't get made. One, the security of availability can't be guaranteed. But number two, the more we delay to make a decision. Remember, there's an actual cost, but then there's a hedging cost, which is the fact. You know, because the price of food is going up all the time, do you know that ultimately the state is going to actually to bring back the stock or to buy the stock, whatever we do, we are going to lose money. And the issue to say, can we manage the elasticity of losing that particular man. We are going to lose. Governor, I'm saying we have a co-opted actually, we have what? Because we must manage it. But those who make mistakes or who benefited, I don't want to prejudge. Ultimately, the report, if it says there's wrongdoing, they will be pursued without any fear. They have to. Because this thing belongs to our people. I thought we should be able to say those particular issues. Because those are some of the issues that are more topical, but very sensitive. And we hope we should be in a position to go through them. We might have we expect the wisdom of sharpening our thoughts around policy, around implementation, but also around how we do oversight of our entity. That's our prayer. On behalf of ourselves, the team, team NH Chair, we want to thank you for allowing us to do that. There is a funny thing, the PG was saying, why don't they call me Minister of Energy Security? I said, I think I support you. Because we must secure and secure the energy for us and for our future generation. But I don't do the presidential loop and the other things in the Constitution. Spoken of course. I'm waiting to hear if there are any suggestions on the process. So we have to wait for 5 minutes and we'll come back with the question. The only thing I want to understand is, so you agree that you would take questions as they appear here, item by item, and go through the in that manner. So, let's wait for 10 minutes because that was a long presentation.
job. Repositioning of the had experience spoken about it. That's the thing that I wanted to check with you, honorable ministers, whether are we doing progress with the repositioning of this department? Because it's not that time we're hearing some stories. The following year, they change. We don't get the sufficient answers from the DG and the ministers. The other one, even though I'm told that I must raise according to the department, the program meeting, sorry. the first meeting when I met you in the portfolio committee, you were brand new minister. But today, the second time meeting you, it's like you are an old minister in the family. And these are some of the things that we wanted from the powers be that we must get the report from ministers or from the government. Because where I'm sitting, minister, I have some difficult questions for you, but in the process, you will answer some of those questions that I was supposed to ask you, which makes me very happy. Because you are not committing yourself to say by January I will deal with this matter, and when you come back for the one, you haven't dealt with that matter, and when you come and report to us and ask you a question, you run away from answering the question. This is very important for us to say, congratulations, Mr. You are doing a very good job. I'm not speaking on behalf of the committee here because they might have some of their own questions relating to the presentation here. I will wait for maybe tomorrow for the department to ask some of the serious questions that they have asked them since 2014. I didn't get any answer from the department. It's a very serious matter. One of the questions, honorable minister, is that we wanted to check with the department some years back with regard to the settlement of the DG of the department to the entity. We didn't get an answer. And when you have somebody in the department who's acting, we have 18, there are 18, all of them here, maybe including an entity. If people are in the position of acting, the likelihood is that they will not be hands-on to deal with the matters because they know after 2 or 6 months down the line, they might be reshuffled and get a new person who will be in charge. We spoke about a number of things like the personal SA here. You talk about it in the presentation, but I'm told the chair said I must follow the program. My style as Mr. Makala, after the presentation, I will talk about the whole issues, but now that you are our hands are tied by the chair to say four of these, I will do that chair. Thank you, honorable chair and minister.
Thank you. a bit unfair. You inherited a lot of the problems. I'm sure you're doing your best to spend. But one thing that I'm a little bit concerned with is the fast tracking of the integrated resource plan, IRP. We waited 11 years for an IRP update and 6 years for an IRP. Enough public engagement has been rushed in a very short and unreasonable time, I would say. I also think that advertising of this public participation is very inadequate. Meaningful display and participation should take place in a sensible place that must be displayed. And the IFP should follow the IEP process. And why is the Department of Energy running IFP and IFP in parallel? Chances that IFP will work the IRP. The public participation project cannot close before policy adjustment commences. Public must be allowed to comment on the amended draft and again on the policy adjustment. Stakeholder adjustments affect entirely on the IFP development processes. And if I just run through this, on page 16, I've mentioned an increase of 40% based on nuclear. I think it's very optimistic. On page 20, affordable minimize the cost of energy. You said what if people say, on page 19, sorry, first, the review of the IRP is different from the 2010 2030 IRP. So I might note, there are some things missing in the new rewrite. A number of the appendices referred to in the section of the Gazette draft of the IRP 2016, dated October, are missing on the revised draft revision. Why is that? Which of all the references of the missing appendix has been removed? If the department wants to start with selective IRP appliances, it looks like it's been selective. The IRP simply cannot replicate the IRP. It appears to create a bias towards the inclusion of nuclear ministers. On clean fuels refinery capacity, 22 says there's no policy, but there's no policy uncertainty. No, there's no fixed policy on oil and gas currently. The South African, on page, the next page 23, the South African National Development, the NDP, and the NDP changes basically every day. The NDP is very much dependent on the whole economical, what happens all over the world. Eskom suddenly caused the loss of momentum. It's too late now to say that we have excess of power available for growth. We've already from the clean fuel, so you mentioned South Africa. You know, for the love of me, Petro South Africa withdraw for gas. They draw vertical instead of horizontal, and they missed the gas pocket. The person responsible for project in Kwezi got a 2.3 million rand bonus, performance bonus. And how do we explain this to our dealers? I can elaborate on millions of barrels sold under supply. Renewable energy. While the whole world moves to renewable energy, Minister, we pay millions to defend nuclear energy and coal. And you said that the Cape Town High Court decision. The Cape Town High Court decision said that there's no lawful decision or reason. We don't really need nuclear power, that is required urgently. That was basically the court rules on three key things: international agreement, things, but basically it comes to that. There's no real need for nuclear immediately. The cost factor. Energy cost. We've seen the operating cost for Eskom since 2011 went up with nearly 400% while the capacity didn't increase with 1%. Now NERSA wants to increase the cost from April 2018 with 20% to the direct customers and 27% to the total distributors. This will pull back another 63 billion rand from customers. This department and Eskom are trapped in a death spiral with rising prices and declining sales.
Must be detailed, must be made public, and must provide and made public before any process can commence. So my question is, Chair, if the RFP is the first basis of the procurement process, then where are we in getting the department to tell us what the procurement process will look like? And when will they make that publicly available? Because, Chair, I think it was on the 7th of November we had Dr. Calvin Kemp of NECSA. NECSA is the co-entity that will be procuring nuclear. And he stated on the record to this committee that the procurement process for nuclear has never ever stopped. Quote, unquote. We have the recordings. You can make them available if they are required. It fundamentally told us that NECSA and EXIM, by virtue of his statement, are in violation of a court order which sets aside the nuclear deal in totality, including the RFI and the RFP. We had Mr. Kim, who confirmed that the RFP is ready to go. Really, Mr. Kim? How is the RFP ready to go when you weren't supposed to be working on it since the judgment was passed in April? So is the department in consent with alongside EXIM and NECSA, and can the department tell us what processes they've undertaken or continue to undertake despite the fact that the nuclear deal has been set aside? The court said nothing about the government not being able to procure nuclear, but what it did say quite clearly was that the processes followed to date are illegal and therefore set aside. And I'm deeply troubled, Chair, if it is in fact true that EXIM and NECSA have continued along the procurement processes when that is in direct violation of a court order. We now have civil society seeking a declaratory order from the Western Cape High Court to determine whether this is in case of fact. It should not be left up to civil society to fund the bill to find out whether our government is actually adhering to court judgment. This is hugely problematic. And again, Chair, it speaks to a process that is fundamentally flawed. It speaks to a political process which has a singular aim in kind of delivering nuclear to South Africa from hell or high water, whether we need it or not. I mean, the Minister's comments today about the basic assumptions that underline the 2010 IRP, which, Chair, were fundamentally flawed, by the way, will be applied to the IRP update. And therefore, nuclear is naturally part of the mix of the energy mix which we will pursue. Chair, there must be a rational situation where nuclear is not part of the option because it's not part of the least cost option. There are other options that can be sought. The actual IRP document that was delivered in November clearly indicated five different scenarios, of which only one in which nuclear was included and it was brought forward to 2020. And that was only based on the assumption that you prevent the expansion of IPPs and specifically renewables in the energy mix, which is a false assumption. So, Chair, what we need from the Minister is essentially an explanation of what assumptions are being applied to the IRP document. How will the IRP document be different to the one that we've seen in terms of the draft? When will that come to this committee? When will that be made publicly available? And, Chair, I must say, I don't really care what happens with the energy policy conference. In terms of that document, that is governed by the rule of law. The rule of law requires the IRP document to be reflective of public comments based on the original document that went through Cabinet and to deliver to this committee for discussion either before or after it goes to Cabinet. So can the Minister please commit to a date for when he will deliver the IRP so we can have a technical discussion about the IRP, not four or five slides broadly describing what the IRP process is. We know what the IRP process is. We want to know what the assumptions that underlie the IRP are, how the IRP document has been changed, and how the Minister is going to justify nuclear energy mix within that context. Because those are things we need to know from a procedural point of view, Chair, so we can decide as whether this Parliament, if we want to go ahead with nuclear, whether the civil society might want to interject or we might want to interject. So that's information that we need, and Chair, today was supposed to be the delivery of that information. I'm very disappointed that it hasn't been made available. Fundamentally, the Minister has wasted our time on the discussion of our IEP. This is a fact. Chair, I would like the Minister to please explain to me also what his understanding is of the relationship between the Ministerial Section 34 determination and the IRP IEP. Because the court is quite explicit around how Section 34 governs the framework for procurement on nuclear. But fundamentally, Chair, the policy document, the IRP, which is the cornerstone of all policy in South Africa, must be the preceding document to a Section 34 ministerial determination, and the determination must be guided, if not bound, by the policy document, which is the IRP. So my question is, does the Minister believe that he can issue a Section 34 determination in the absence of a completed IRP? Does he have legal advice to say that this he can or cannot do? And what is his understanding of the relationship between his ability to issue a Section 34 ministerial determination and the IRP and IEP? I reiterate on the nuclear new build program, I'm not sure you're going to probably hear about this on Eskom, but the minister has touched on it. The court has been clear. A procurement process must be detailed and provided and made public before commencement of procurement. Now, Mr. Kim told us that the RFP is ready to go, that it's imminent, we're just waiting for political time. Well, Mr. Kim, you don't need political time. What you need is a process that is guided by the court of stages in conjunction with the National Procurement Regulation, which indicates that any attempt to procure nuclear must be made public. The process for that procurement process must be made public so that it can be evaluated, interrogated, and must be fully explained to the public. That then includes public participation. That then includes concurrence on NERSA. And the court has declared that NERSA hasn't applied its mind in the situation before, and therefore NERSA will now have to categorically and critically apply its mind to any attempt by the minister to see concurrence to build nuclear. Chair, I'm very concerned about this energy indaba, which is now supposed to be happening in December. Could the minister please tell us whether this energy indaba equals the public participation called for by the court in its ruling in April? Is he going to claim that the indaba, which is now calling equals public consultation? It would be interesting to know if that is in his mind the two are the same thing, because if not, or if they are, there are specific problems. Chair, again, you know, we've completely skated around the cost question around nuclear. The 1 trillion figure, Minister, actually comes from the previous that it were pieces. That was her figure. It doesn't come from the DA, it doesn't come from civil society, it comes from the ANC. It comes from a former Minister of Energy. But we would assume would have some sense of what she was saying when she made that statement. So the 1 trillion figure, Minister, stands because it comes from your party. In terms of nuclear cost, Chair, we need a bit more than we're getting. Oh, we have to wait for this and that, and oh, there's complexities and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, Chair, what we can say about Kuburg as, oh, it's very cheap electricity now because it's been capitalized is one thing. But the fact of the matter is, Eskom has severe constraints. In terms of the energy, the nuclear energy policy of 2008, Eskom has to own and operate the nuclear power station. It has to be the majority shareholder, right? So that means if Eskom enters into some joint venture, it has to have the majority of the capital to go to that joint venture. From our reading, Eskom doesn't have that kind of money available to it, first of all. Second of all, Chair, if they enter a JV model, something similar to what we've seen with Ross Geo and Petro today, where Ross Geo is wanting to extract 8 times the cost of what Petro today can afford for an offtake agreement on the gas from Block 9A or Block 11A and Block 9, we have a situation where there will be significant upward pressure on electricity prices in South Africa. So the Minister talks about how we need to be competitive, it needs to be this, but he knows fundamentally that the adoption of nuclear will have a significant impact on electricity. So, Chair, what you've also asked for is electricity pricing costs. Clear data with assumptions that explain to us what the impacts of our energy mix choices are on the long-term energy prices of South Africa. What do we get? 4 slides of hogwash about broad cost zones, don't let it be distorted, to look across the value chain. Chair, we can look across the value chain, that's great. But, you know, the rubber hits the tar when it comes to how much the consumer has to pay for electricity, how much businesses have to pay for electricity, and therefore how competitive we are as an economy vis-a-vis our competitor nation. So, Chair, we have been asking, blood, sweat and tears, for this electricity pricing part. We know that if they try and go ahead with this process, they have to provide it, and people go to court to seek that it is provided. Don't give us all sides broadly, cost might be this, might be that. We want figures. No one buys a Ferrari and goes, well, we kind of think it costs about this much broadly, vaguely, but it depends on, you know, the seating that we choose or whatever. As Dr. Calvin King was happy saying to us last week, you know, there's 3 to go, we just have to choose the leather that we want to buy the car. Chair, we need to know the cost. A greater description of cost. We know the National Treasury is in possession of reports on cost. The Minister surely has seen the reports on cost, and it's about time that those costs are made available to the community. Chair, can the Minister please explain to me what his understanding is in terms of the National Procurement Regulations and how they affect the nuclear deal? And specifically, has his department, has NESA, or has Eskom applied for exemption or deviation from these National Procurement Regulations? We need to understand, Chair, if they are seeking exemption, fundamentally we want to understand why. Chair, I'm very concerned about what the Minister has to say about IPPs. Again, there's this tacit support for IPPs, but fundamentally he's kind of indicated that we will support IPPs as long as it doesn't threaten Eskom. Chair, the fundamental point of IPP and the renewables program and the independent power producer program is to create competition to Eskom. So we can force Eskom to become more efficient, to compete, so that it lowers its overall cost, why Christian's commitment to IP program, saying no, we work on energy mix, but fundamentally he knows and I know that we have an excess of electricity. If we continue to produce electricity from a low cost source such as renewables, the case for nuclear becomes ever more distant and more difficult to bring to bear, because fundamentally nuclear cannot compete against the prices of other energy sources. And we know that, Jim, at the best cost under the scenario of the nuclear, 121 per kilowatt hour versus 77 cents, 85 cents for renewables. So, Chair, you know, the Minister talks one way but actually walks the other way, and that's deeply concerning, it's disingenuous, and frankly, it tells us that the Minister's actually not serious about his commitment to renewables. Chair, I just reiterate this question around the electricity pricing cost. We cannot make decisions or hold the department accountable if we do not know what the long-term consequences of decisions on the energy mix will look like. Now, the previous RP update, 2016, the draft that we talked about, dealt with this broadly, but not in detail. And fundamentally, Chair, if we're going to understand the cost of nuclear, not just the bill's cost, but the impact on the economy and the long-term impact on that, means understanding what it's going to cost us in terms of we're going to pay electricity, we really need that document. And if the department doesn't have it, there's a problem. How are you telling us energy from nuclear is sustainable and cheap if this information is not readily available to remain public and provided to this committee? So again, we're shrouded in mystery and secrecy. You know, the minister tells us, oh, it's all going to be done affordably and scale and blah, 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 etc. But fundamentally, Chair, we've got no new information today that we didn't have last week. There's no movement on it. There's no movement on anything on the IP, no movement on the IEP. Fundamentally, the minister's done a good catch on, but we're none the wiser on anything. So, Chair, deeply disappointed, and the department has completely failed on what we've asked them to do. And fundamentally, it's, you know, it really does, again, create the question of whether we can trust the Honourable Paul to do the right thing in the interest of Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd just like to agree with some of the sentiments expressed by my colleague that the presentation was very disappointing. It was very light on detail. We expected today to get a much clearer picture of our IRP process specifically and the procurement process in particular, in general. And that was forthcoming, so perhaps the Minister will use this opportunity to give us some more specifics and to fill in the gaps. The first question I want to ask is about the affordability. Now, our Finance Minister, Minister Gigaba, has said on numerous occasions that the nuclear package is unaffordable and that we don't need it because we're already generating excess capacity. And this is contrary to the IRP 2010 as well as the draft 2016. Minister, do you disagree with your Finance Minister that nuclear is unaffordable? And if you do disagree with him, where do you expect to get the money from if Treasury won't give you the money? Secondly, my colleague raised the issue of intergovernmental agreements and the Section 34 determinations that were declared invalid. Can you tell us today, Minister, if any new intergovernmental agreements have been signed, when do you expect to sign them, and when do you expect to table them in Parliament for ratification? And similarly, have any Section 34 determinations been made? We saw that last time it took 2 years for the Section 34 determination to be tabled in Parliament, so there is a chance it could have been signed without us knowing about it. When do you expect that declaration to be made, and when do you expect to table that in Parliament? Then on the IRP 2016, the draft has been put out for public comment. We've seen that it's been largely rejected in most quarters, including by the CSIR, which you mentioned earlier in quite glowing terms. And the CSIR, in their report, defines no reason to include nuclear in the energy mix. And for them, the least cost option is a blend of solar, wind, and gas. Now, I want to ask you, have you taken all submissions into account in this process? And if the new RLP 2016 differs radically from the draft, will it too be submitted for a third round of public participation? Then I want to talk about the rushing of the RRP, and this is something that I think concerns everybody on this committee. Now, the previous minister set the date to February 2018 for the finalisation of the RRP. and you are now fast-tracking it, as you said today, you want to get it done, you want to get it done in time for the ANC conference, you want to get it to cabinet. What is the rush, exactly? The finance minister has already said that we're generating excess capacity. What is the difference between December and February? At the beginning of the meeting, you mentioned the ANC's December conference as a big factor in your decision-making. What do you say, then, to the perception that you're trying to get the RFP signed, sealed, and delivered before the ANC's conference because you're concerned that what happens at that conference might have a bearing on the future? Is that the reason you're cross-tracking the RFP? Because it's got to do with the political machinations at the ANC's conference. Please, can you be very clear on that? Then, Chairperson, there's lots of controversy swirling around the appointment of the minister, and I think today is a good opportunity for him to deal with those rumours head on and to categorically give us some answers about what we read about in press reports. Now, there was a press report recently that said that the minister and a presidential aide met with the Russian delegation on or around the 16th of October. Now, this was the day before the cabinet reshuffle. Minister, can you tell us, did you meet with the Russian delegation on the day before the cabinet reshuffle? If you did meet with that delegation, can you tell us what was discussed at that meeting and what was the outcome of that meeting? Secondly, Chairperson, the Minister mentioned Vladimir Putin earlier in reference to rail program. There is another news report that President Zuma and the Minister met with Vladimir Putin in August 2014 at President Putin's residence in Russia. Can the minister confirm that this meeting did take place? Was it related to, if it did take place, was it related to the intergovernmental agreement that was signed a month later? Was any deal struck? And do you have knowledge of anybody in government receiving any money in relation to nuclear procurement?
You know, if there is one weakness department are able to actually effectively oversee. So if it's then worsened by vacancies, it even becomes a problem, especially because from what I've seen, the biggest area of staff shortages deals with clean energy program, which is an important matter, as well as energy policy and planning. I just thought that maybe I would ask that as the first question. I must say, contrary to what some of my colleagues have said, I think we should welcome this idea of an endowment. Because, I don't know, I'm new. Chair, you will correct me. I don't know to what extent we engaged all of those who are interested, maybe as a portfolio committee we've done it before, including those who disagree with what government intends to do. We need to listen to them and engage them seriously. We ourselves, if we have not done that, we might on one or two of these issues have our own help. There are ladies and gentlemen always on Cabinet Day who stand outside here. I'm always curious. I drive through, but I say, I would really like to hear and engage them. You know, why are they raising the things that they are actually raising? But I'm not going to go into nuclear now. I'll come back to that. So the idea of an endowment, I think we should welcome it. Maybe the minister might want at some stage to take us on now into his confidence. How does he intend convening this endowment and the taste maybe of people who will be invited? I know for instance that the National Union of Mine Workers has got very serious differences on some of these issues. So it would be very helpful then to actually do that. So I don't think the idea of any dialogue convened by the minister is a bad idea at all. But that might help. Now, I must say though, Minister, new as I am, I'm really concerned about the inability. I've been aware of this, of course. I haven't been a member of cabinet. Of the IEP. As to why is it taking this long? There are indeed strong suspicions that it's got to do with nuclear, because nuclear is part of it's an important component of the planned energy mix. But at the same time, I think we must be cautious that we don't rush them to plan in such a way that it's not adequately coherent, because this is crucial. Integrated energy plan. You know, though, one thing that worries me in relation to this, I've seen this also practically. There seems to be not an insignificant, the Chairperson was highlighting this to me, because we are neighbors also in the Parliament in terms of our bench. By the way, Minister, it's very nice to be a third bencher, because you only ask questions. You only ask questions. My worry is rich people and companies getting off the Eskom. I'm not so sure to what extent are we really grappling with that and its implications for any integrated energy plan, or even an IRP for that matter. And it seems to be fashionable now. In fact, you may run the risk that Eskom, not long from now, may only just be connecting the poor, who unfortunately are unable to pay. And then your rich customers, who are at least able to pay, then go away. Then it's got all sorts of implications about, I don't know whether you you have thought about that, but I would suggest that something that is serious. That because we may just come with an IEP that is meaningless if we don't seriously take that matter into account. I'm told, for instance, in a place you know very well, Sasol in Secunda, it's generating its own electricity, and I'm told that the surplus itself to Eskom, that because it generates some surplus. I just thought, Chair, I would really like to know about this. I think that the other issues are in the next item, Chair. I just wanted to deal with that. Yes, and so I agree with those who are saying, Minister, you want to do the IEP. Can you give us? I didn't hear unless I missed it. You know what our timeline is there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me start by appreciating the spot on and good resolution by the Minister. We know where we are now and where we are going. Very clear now. I appreciate the position. I was confused, yes, Chair, because I'm satisfied with the process of the IRP that was approved by the Cabinet in March for 2010-2020. I still have a question on that. I understood the process of the Minister. But I was confused now because my previous honourable members were raising other issues, so I decided to raise my hand. The issue of I've already mentioned that the issue of IEP is very clear. The revised balance scenario published 2010, those were very clear to me by the Minister. I've got a question on slide 46. Because the issue of nuclear has been politicized in South Africa, so you don't know what is what. I want the Minister to explain this trillion issue once and for all. And talk on the slide that the cost of nuclear is currently less than the cost of most of coal fibers. It's on slide 46. I also want the Minister to elaborate on slide 44 about the internet and unpredictability of the solar and wind power. I want to elaborate on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And let me also join other members to congratulate the delegation. And of course, for me, it is very clear, and it is actually providing the understanding of what needs to be done. Maybe it's about to say, of course, it will be followed by the program. But Chair, if I were to maybe to say something about my colleagues who asked questions, if I were to speak in my own mother language, I would say, of course, Ishtara Shangonzo. Ngonzo, Chepesen, and Africans as the Amelko. Amelko.
Point of order.
I don't understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, no, that's
with
what
me, because I want.
What for? You're saying that's talking about for. You can only get a for. Another part. What?
No. What I'm saying, Che, is that if I were to speak in my mother language, if I were to speak in my mother language, I would say, Ishitaka Shango also. And I'm saying in Africa, what is Ngozo? What Ngozo is? It's a babe. And in Africans, they call it Hammer Pop. It's a babe. Hammer Pop. Is that an insult? I'm fine,
Patch. Yeah. Now I didn't hear the fact that I'm not super shy.
But let me continue, Chairperson, to say my question relates to the SOEs with regards to job creation. Because looking at them, I think they are created for job creation in the main. Che, my worry is that maybe the minister would be able to tell us that the SOEs, for me, they are not creating jobs, especially for young people. Whether it could be those who have got qualifications in terms of the jobs related to different SOEs. But at the same time, we've got a pool of young people there, Minister, who do not have actually qualifications. Now, what mechanisms are those SOEs using, especially to recruit in the rural areas? Because that migration from rural areas to the urban, it's a problem. Because then when young people move from the rural areas to the urban areas, they also want an accommodation, which is very problematic in getting the job and at the same time getting an accommodation. Now, I think that is my question, Chair, and my wife. But lastly, Chair, I think if really nuclear power is not needed, maybe in our country, can we start by disconnecting Quebec? Because it looks like for as long as a few have what support them, they are not interested with the poor people who do not have. Maybe we need to be clarified as to, besides all those things which the nuclear is providing to the people, what else do nuclear in fact give to the people, especially the poor? because we can't sit, you know, as if things have not changed. I think we need to indicate where changes are needed. In fact, Chair, I don't think it is in the interest of our people to negotiate as to how do we move forward in terms of getting out of a poverty cycle, that which majority of people belong to. So that is my concern, Chair. Thanks.
Decommission of some of our energy sector by 2024 to 2028. I'm not so sure if what impact will you have as a country, like in terms of unemployment, job losses, infrastructure, because you know that maybe the infrastructure will be aging. And in terms of that, how balanced in terms of the energy balance between that is on page 17. I think the minister will be able to assist that in terms of the terms and also the structuring, the term on investment and so on. I'll pause there for now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. point of vote.
Good answer.